Brother Dana, brother mine, delivers you best worst case scenario podcast.
What I was saying before you started this was that you are my star. You are my dancing wooden boy. And I just need...
Oh, really?
I need you to do the accents because you're good at them.
Why'd you make me out of all this shitty wood?
It's all I had.
It's all terrible.
It's all knobby.
My back is killing me all the time and my legs don't work.
I'm sorry you have scoliosis, but this driftwood is all I had.
You bastard.
I am the star. You say that like you're Elsa from... American Horror Story.
I meant to say it more like Christoph Waltz in a German accent.
Yeah, my little wooden boy.
But where I was going with that was I was trying to do a Christoph Waltz because he's... Is he German? He's Austrian? Is he Swiss?
Nobody knows.
He's European.
He's the European Waltz. He's a mixture of everything.
And that somehow connects to the fact that we are talking about Frankenstein tonight.
Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
The Monster Mash.
I know, I just want to hear that song right now.
And now that's stuck in everyone's heads forever.
Suddenly it's Halloween. It's October.
I can't wait.
Every day's Halloween for me.
I literally couldn't wait because we're doing this episode now and we're in summer. But you know what? Everyone can use a little green, mean monster in their life. So
yeah, those energy drinks are delicious.
No.
Yes. I love the green apple, the original monster. Yeah, so
they're
tasty.
So bad for you.
They're
Don't
so
do
good.
It.
You know they're bad for you while you're drinking it, but you're like, ah.
You're drinking the devil's juice.
It's like smoking a cigarette. You're like, fuck my
Probably
life.
Probably worse than a cigarette, man.
You're like, I don't care about my future every time you have one. They're great.
But Frankenstein, it's a book.
It is a book.
When was it written?
A long time ago in a galaxy far away in 1818 when nobody smiled.
Was it Switzerland?
Or, sorry, 1818 is when Mary Shelley started writing this long, long-ass novel, which was a series of letters that she wrote.
Like, so, to herself?
Not to herself, but as if she was the character writing them. It's
just
very
picture
strange.
That guy, like, playing
very
chess
strange.
With himself.
It's sad. It's loneliness and boredom, but also because there was no internet back then, we got a lot of creativity, you know? And people wrote cool fucking books. Like Frankenstein.
Right, and I think there was a story behind that, what you were saying, behind her actually coming up with it.
Well, did you know that Frankenstein was originally called the modern Prometheus? Because it was sort of like touching on Greek mythology, apparently.
I think I've heard that it's like connected with it. That's all I know.
That's all I know, too.
Well.
That was the title.
We've covered all bases.
We covered it. That's it, folks.
Good night, guys. Jinx.
Double. You owe me a Coke.
Okay. That lady, Mary Shelley, she came up with this idea in the Swiss Alps with her friends, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And it was the writing competition that she was having with a few of her friends and her future husband that she didn't know would be her husband yet, Percy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were staying at Lord Byron, Lord Byron's house.
Manor?
He just sounds fancy as fuck, doesn't he?
It was probably like a little cottage. Yeah. No, I think it was a cabin, because from what I read...
Probably one of his guest houses on the castle grounds that they're staying in.
This is one of my closets, my water closets.
We can stay here. My parents won't bug us in here. Lord
You'll
Byron.
Quite like this one. So they were in the Swiss Alps, and I guess it was an unusually rainy summer. So instead of...
Oh, yeah. It was... That year was known as the year with no summer. A year with no summer for the whole world because there was a volcanic eruption. and it created like this ash that just was perpetual. So it was always dark for like, it took a while for the air to clear, but mm-hmm. people were advised like today to stay inside.
They sent out like a weather warning.
Yeah. Stay home. Stay safe.
Yeah. So they were stuck inside their cabins.
Not stuck, but recommended. So, right. But they were killing
time. And
they're
like, how do we get by this? And let's come up with a contest where we each try to make as scary a story as possible.
Yeah.
And the winner gets what?
I don't know. I don't know whatever the fuck people did back then. There was no, I don't think there was a reward. It was just a bore. It was just an idea.
Bragging rights.
It was an idea that Lord Byron had, and he was the one who wrote the least.
This guy sounds like a real character.
He's a real asshole, if you ask me. But she, like, for several mornings in a row, she was asked, you come up with anything yet? Like, write anything? And each time she said no. Like, she was starting to get kind of, like, flustered because she didn't have any ideas. And then one night she had a nightmare that inspired the whole story, and she just started writing what she thought would be a short story, and then she just kept writing and writing and writing. And
they were all writers though, right?
Yeah, but some of them weren't as good as others, you know.
Some of them sucked.
Some of them, yeah. But yeah, she started writing this story when she was 18, around that competition time, and then finally published it in 1820. But the strange part is it was published anonymously on January 1st, 1820. Nobody knows who published it, who submitted it.
Huh.
So, because she had it all gathered, but she wasn't like on record for submitting it. Nobody.
Stole it and then submitted it anonymously.
Or it could have been some of her family or friends who was like, God, this story's so good. I'm just going to fucking submit it anonymously because this has to be published.
Mm-hmm.
People have to know about the story.
It's so fucked up. People
it's
have
so
to know.
So fucked up.
Yeah.
That this little teenage girl wrote such a fucked up story.
Yeah.
Like, how depressed do you have to be to write this thing?
And there have been a lot of adaptations of Frankenstein since that time.
There has.
And we watched, what was it called?
Are you going to tell we watched them?
We watched, yeah, I'm sorry, man. I'm going to throw you under the bus. We watched Young Frankenstein.
Mine watched it by himself. He told me about it, how bad it was.
With Gene Wilder, right?
Yeah.
What did you think?
It was kind of creepy. Not because of Frankenstein, but because of the sexual innuendos in there. It was disturbing and not the right way. If you've seen Dead and Loving It... the Dracula parody is kind of like that, but less funny. And also it was black and white, which I didn't like too much because they had color by that time. But they were trying to, you know, fit with the Frankenstein theme, a horror, and horror movies were generally in black and white. It just felt like it was all over the place and didn't know what it wanted to be.
Yeah.
And the Mr. Bean googly eye guy was
He's
not,
probably the best actor in it, man.
He was constantly breaking the fourth wall. Or
he
whatever.
Was.
He was talking directly to the camera.
But saying, do you think he was trying to, or do you think that's because his eyes were just looking at the camera?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if his eyes are really that fucked up, because they look like they're bulging out of his skull, don't mm-hmm. they? Like he popped them out for the movie.
Well, I'm wondering if maybe he got like contacts to look like his eyes were looking in different directions, or if his eyes were really like that. Regardless though, you have to give the man props because he did really good. And I think the few like chuckles that I had watching the movie
were from him. Oh man, that's pretty that's harsh. That's saying a lot.
And I like Gene Wilder too.
Gene Wilder isn't really funny. He's intense. And the shit that he says, the way he says it is more shocking and funny than what he's actually saying. He's usually chewing somebody out and you're like laughing nervously because you're not sure if he's actually acting. Like, I could just imagine him doing auditions and just like fucking like screaming at the top of his lungs in front of these judges or these auditioners. And
They're like, okay, you can have it. Just get the fuck out of here. I don't want, my eardrums are throbbing.
It's Frankenstein.
But that hump guy.
The hump guy.
His lovely little humps on his back.
Know, if you do watch that movie, you'll know why you have to ask, which hump guy are you talking about? Because that movie had so many sexual
things. It had a lot of humping going on.
But they
there.
Were really uncomfortable feeling. Like, there was a borderline sexual assault scene with Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster and Victor Frankenstein's bride-to-be.
Right.
And it was supposed to be funny.
He kidnapped her. He kidnapped his fiance and threw her in the woods and was starting to like kind of unbutton his shirt. Like
he was going.
And I was like, oh my God, this isn't going that way, is it? I was like, why is he unbuttoning?
It's going to twist. It's going to be funny.
Someone's going to save her or he's going to like do something.
Nope.
Like
disturbing.
And it was
jeez.
That whole movie's PG too.
What?
Well, the way they shot that scene is PG, but it's very serious what's going on.
Yeah. So let's get into the actual story, the original story, unless you have anything you want to say about Young Frankenstein.
No, I want to get out of Young Frankenstein.
Okay,
let's get out of there.
Let's get out of Frankenstein and let's get to Mary Shelley's story.
Mary Shelley. I just picture her voice sounding like that. I'm Mary Shelley.
Frankenstein grabbed his heart. I don't know why I sound like it.
Mary Shelley. That's what she sounds like.
I picture braces. Did they have braces in 1818?
If they did, it was probably giant.
Yeah. So, for people who haven't read Frankenstein and don't really know what it's about, and all they can think of is the green dude, I want to get into sort of the specifics of the book to give people a better version of the story so they can understand how truly grotesque and disturbing it is. Because I don't feel like you get that from the Hollywood.
And to clarify, which is apparently widely misconstrued, Frankenstein is not the monster. It's the doctor, damn it. It's the doctor.
Are you sure?
Frankenstein is the doctor.
I'm not convinced, but I'll take your word for it for now.
The monster. Yeah,
Dana's is correct.
He's just known as the creature. He didn't get a name. He wasn't special enough to get a name. That's why he fucked everyone up.
Preach. So, the novel that she wrote, it kicks off with a guy named Robert Walton, who is a well-to-do Englishman. And he's writing to his sister while on a voyage to the North Pole on a ship that he's actually the captain of.
He's a sea captain, and he's writing these letters.
To his sister.
Because he missed her.
Right. And there's four of them that starts, and it culminates in Robert finding Victor Frankenstein stranded on the ice on like a sled.
Kind of like if you've ever seen the Rudolph animation. You know, the old one with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know, like the prospector, and you got the reindeer all working together and they're picking away at the ice, trying to get to the abominable snowman.
Frankenstein used to dig up old corpses.
Yeah.
So he's on the ice. They rescue him. They bring him on board. And then the following pages are Victor's narration to Robert about his life. And he tells how he had a mostly happy childhood, how he became interested in the occult, how he left for Ingolstadt.
Ingolstadt.
I don't know how to say that.
Ingolstadt.
At the age of 17 for university. And it was actually there where things got kind of dark.
That's when he started getting fascinated with bringing dead stuff to life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because he was a smart guy. He excelled in all of his courses. He learned.
He was the inventor of Viagra.
Dead hard. Yes. So he.
Dead and loving it.
He quickly surpassed his professors in like knowledge of Yeah, they were actually, his professors were actually, one of his professors loved him, and the other professor was very jealous of him and gave him a hard time in school because he didn't, his professor was giving him a hard time because he was reading these books about reanimating the dead.
Right, and like a cult, not he was very like, scientifically.
That's bullshit magic stuff. Stop reading that.
That's some bullshit magic. Get out of here with that.
Yeah, stop as that.
Right. So it was there in his schooling years that he started to experiment with creating, with animating a dead body.
Yes.
And when he was done with it, it horrified him so much that he ran out of his apartment and he spent the whole night pacing in the yard because he didn't want to go back in and face.
You mean after he summoned it? After he made the creature?
Yeah. Well, to be exact, he made it, ran into the next room, fell asleep, woke up to find the monster smiling over him.
He ran into the next room and then fell asleep?
That's what it said.
Doesn't make any sense.
And then he woke up to find it smiling over him, and he ran outside.
And it was hard as a rock.
And he spent the whole night pacing in the yard because he didn't want to go back in there.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't either, would you? But let's say you made something big and horny, man.
No.
Get out of that room.
Yeah, I would too. But eventually he did go back in with a friend, and the creature
was a little curious.
Was nowhere to be seen.
Of course, because that's like fucking creepy as hell. That's like in every horror movie genre, something creepy is there, and then you go back and it's gone. Oh no, where is it? Where is it?
Oh, I'll tell you. So, skipping forward a little bit, Victor gets a letter that his younger brother has been murdered.
Got a letter.
That his brother had been murdered. So, he returns to Geneva.
Murder.
And when he arrives, he gets there so late that he spends the night walking around in the woods like a weirdo.
Like a normal university kid.
But while he's out there, he sees the monster he created. And he gets it in his head that the monster is responsible for his brother's death.
Right. His brother was William, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it gets fucked up.
Yeah, this is really where
this
it goes
is
downhill.
Where it turns into like Knives Out meets The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo meets a fucked up movie.
Like it's a Frankenstein of a movie.
There's so much. Oh my God. There's so much drama. Like if Amazon or a current Netflix put a big budget on Frankenstein.
They did. It has Sean Bean, and I think he dies in it.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
You don't need to tell me that. But if they did, they could do the show so well. Maybe it's already out there and I don't know it, but
perhaps if it is, listeners in the comments, whatever, message us, let us know.
Yeah. Or don't.
Or do.
Do it.
Do it. So, the messed up thing is that a close friend of the family, Justine.
Yeah, Justine Moritz.
Is framed for the murder.
The murder.
The murder, and she gets executed even though Victor knows she's innocent. But he can't come forward and be like, hey, actually, I created this really grotesque thing and it killed my brother, so she's innocent.
Yeah.
Because he'd sound like a crazy person.
Yeah, that was such a tragic part because I actually was
Did you cry a little bit?
I was like, no, I didn't. I held it back like a man, like a fucking man. I listened to the Frankenstein audiobook by Steve Parker on YouTube, and he does awesome dramatized audiobooks.
Steve Parker, the man.
But, you know, I made it, not to diss him, but I made it like halfway and stopped listening because I wasn't into the Frankenstein, you know, just the way it reads. Mm-hmm. The way it reads. I like the story, just not the writing.
Just old as shit.
But when it got to that part about Justine, it was really like, it was really intense and dramatic because the main character, whatever his name is, what's his name? The main character is trying to save her and trying to like get people to Elizabeth, which is like his stepsister or something, is trying to testify in court against the claims that she murdered William.
Right.
And fucking Justine isn't doing she's not like standing up for herself because it would be against the case. It would make her look bad.
Yeah. So and, she decides not to just plead guilty.
Yeah. And she ends up getting hung.
Yeah.
So fucking terrible. God damn. Mary Shelley was fucked up. God damn.
Yeah. So already Victor's convinced that the monster has led to the death of two people close to him.
Which the first one is his little bro.
Mm-hmm. And then the Justine. Second...
yeah.
Sorry, did I cut you off?
No, I cut you off, sorry.
So let's fast forward again through a period of depression and considerations of killing himself. Victor again comes face to face with the monster at the top of a glacier peak while on a hike.
Of course.
And get this, the monster eloquently persuades Victor to accompany it to a fire inside a cave of ice.
Wait, what? Is this like a scene from Monsters, Inc.? Like, I've got some snow cones back in the cave there. Why don't you give me some company and I'll tell you all about me life.
Maybe. I don't know. But it doesn't match up with the Frankenstein you're used to of like,
No.
You know?
No,
it eloquently persuades him. So right. It has a high intellect.
No, it does. That's something that, like you said, a lot of the adaptations are kind of fucked up with. They make it seem like this big, dumb berserker thing. It's actually pretty fucking smart, even though maybe it can't talk too well.
Mm-hmm.
It does talk, and it's fucking scheming all the time.
Yeah, let's get to that. So Victor's like, okay, and they go back to the monster's...
lair.
Yeah.
Crib.
And the monster begins narrating the events of its life from its perspective.
Yeah, the creature's narrative.
And in that narration, the creature tells how confused he was when he was created that night. And he also says how he escaped Victor's apartment and fled to the wilderness, where he had to learn how to deal with hunger, thirst, cold, and also how he discovered fire and accidentally burned himself. This is where they get that in Young Frankenstein, how he's afraid of fire, is I think this little part how he mentions that when he first discovered fire, he accidentally burnt himself. Isn't that interesting?
The first thing he did. Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense because he was fucking barbecued to become alive with electricity. Like, I'd be terrified too. Oh!
But he eventually gets over that and he uses it to keep warm.
He also learns he's got a lot of wood.
What do you mean?
As a living Frankenstein thing. Chasing girls through the woods, man.
You're saying he's well endowed? Is that what you're trying to get at?
At least that's what the movies say.
Okay. So after that, back up. So after he gets out and stuff, he finds this refuge in this little hovel next to this couple's cottage.
Right. It's like a shack that's attached to a cottage, right? Mm-hmm. It's like fucking dilapidated piece of shit that this poor family lives in.
Yeah.
And he knows they live there, but he stays quiet, like discreet, and they don't even know he's staying in the shack next to him for like 3 months.
Right.
And he's like bringing them firewood and trying to take care of this family and clearing snow. And
he comes to like him.
Yeah, but they don't even know he exists.
Right.
It's just so sad.
It is. God, and
I feel for Frank.
He pretty much learns to speak by listening and repeating their noises.
And didn't he teach himself how to read?
I think so.
He taught him. I think he stole books from their house and he taught himself how to read and he listened to them talk. So he learned how to talk. So this thing is a fucking
genius.
And what else did he do there? What else did he
so
do?
Eventually,
did he like get into accounting?
No. He got his PhD. Eventually, he tries to speak with the cottage people, and he decides to start with the blind person, because he's like, they won't see me, so maybe they'll be more tolerant.
Which ties right back into Young Frankenstein, when he finds the blind man in the house praying for God.
Oh,
he goes
yeah.
in there.
You're right.
The blind guy can't see him, and Frankenstein is mute, so they're both, they can't talk to each other or see each other. So they just...
There's a tough communication barrier there.
But he goes there into the family's cottage and starts...
Trying to talk to the blind guy.
And but, I think they have a good conversation.
Well, they start to, but then the other people get back suddenly, and they're like, what the shit is this? Get it out of here. Burn it.
Yeah, they're like poking him, prodding him. Poor Frankie. Let's call him Frankie, man.
Yeah.
And give him a name because nobody else has it.
Frankie.
Let's call him Frankie Jr.
Yeah.
Come on.
Little Frankie. So he gets out of there, and he's pissed.
Oh, yeah. He has no more hope for humanity. Like, he's like, okay, I helped these people for the whole winter, and this is how they pay me.
Right. And at that point, he swears to get revenge on humans and his creator in particular.
Yeah.
And he tells how he makes his way to Geneva, runs across Victor's brother, and strangles the shit out of him. And then he tells Victor... after that, that he's got to make him another creature to be his female companion.
Yeah, this is where it gets a little sexual, guys. You might want to, like, light a candle.
Well, I don't think it's that bad, but well, go ahead.
He's like, okay, you made me. I need someone who's like me so I can bang that thing, too. I need to be happy. So you got to make a new monster that's a female monster so I can be with it. It's like Chucky.
After I killed like three of your family members.
Yeah, and I'll keep killing more of your family if you don't make it.
Jeez. You know,
this whole story, though, reminds me of iRobot a little bit.
I was going to say AI.
Yeah, but specifically iRobot. If you've ever seen that with Will Smith, the slappity slap guy, he'll slap your fucking ass. iRobot. It's like the robot that was made... differently, and it slowly realizes it's a robot and sort of feels depression about it and wants things to be different. And while Frankenstein, well, let's call him Frankie Jr. Well, Frankie Jr. was at the cottage for the winter. He actually saw a reflection of his face in a pool there. And he was so horrified by what he saw in the reflection. It was analogous to a human seeing him. So he thought he was like a human this whole time. And then he looks in the reflection and realizes he's this dead, re-morphed, like, experiment. That's when he realizes he's a monster.
Right.
And so it's really complicated, this character. It is. Man, Mary Shelley was a genius. Mary Shelley.
So yeah, he decides that he's gonna get Victor Frankenstein. He's like, you gotta make me a girl or I'm gonna kill you. And Victor's like, okay. So he agrees because the monster makes some compelling arguments too of being like, you know, you made me. Therefore, it's your responsibility to make sure that I have someone.
Someone to
exactly.
You gotta make me a girly.
Give me a schnauzer.
Make me a girly, or I'll give you a swirly.
He's a pirate.
Arr.
So Victor returns to England to start gathering information for the project, but he has a lot of doubts at the same time. I think a lot of people would.
Like any scientist would.
Right. Like, the last time I did this, my brother and best friend died.
I mean, as a scientist, your whole life is based on failures, you know? Mm-hmm. You're constantly experimenting 1,000 times so you can get one answer or one thing to go right. God, I can't fucking talk. You know what I'm saying?
I think so. I just...
You should.
Yeah. No, I know. I get you.
So, Thomas Edison.
Yeah. Yeah. And...
That's all I got.
So while he's touring through Scotland, he stops at a small island in the Orkneys. I think that's how you say it. The Orkneys.
Wow. Sounds like J.R.R. Tolkien.
The Orkneys. Not the bee's knees. and apparently it has everything he needs to start.
This place has everything.
So he sets up his laboratory in a small shack and he starts making the female monster.
Yeah, it basically turns into Breaking Bad there, but there's corpses and body parts instead of drugs.
Oh shit, that's intense, man. Actually, it's in a shack. But yeah. And then one night, overcome with how hideous the creature to be is, he destroys his work. He just can't take it. And the creature is understandably mad and vows to see Victor on his wedding night.
Right. Doesn't he? Because he sees him like Frankenstein. God damn it. I'm trying to break the habit here. Frankie Jr., he sees Victor making this lady up in there.
He's like, yeah.
He's like, and then he just sees like he sees that Victor fucks up his woman before she's made. And then he goes into the apartment or whatever to fucking threaten him again. The final threat. Like, I'll be there at your wedding, which is pretty scary. That's like Kill Bill.
It is.
There. I'll fuck you up. I'll fuck up all everybody you know, and then you last.
Man. Yeah. So let's skip forward to where Victor arrives home to begin planning for his and Elizabeth's wedding. And eventually the night happens.
Which is a stepsister.
Yeah, let's not. It's a different time, I guess.
It's a hot stepsister, yeah.
So eventually, yeah, the ceremony happens, and afterwards they retire to a small cottage.
Yeah.
He goes outside to get ready to face the monster, because he's like, I know he's coming for me.
Yeah,
he fucking, I'm going to be ready.
He arms himself with pistols and daggers and little swords.
Yeah, let's fucking go.
Yeah, he's ready.
And then from inside the house, the monster gets her. He hears her screaming. And the monster kills Elizabeth.
That's so tragic. God.
Yeah.
Mary must have been in a dark place writing this shit. At 18?
Yeah. And to throw a little salt on it, his dad, Frankenstein's dad, dies a few days later.
from the grief.
Yeah.
God, like this guy, Victor, just lost everybody. It's like the Punisher. He lost his whole family to the fucking drug cartel, and he's got no purpose in life except revenge.
Right. So after his whole family dies, pretty much, Victor vows to destroy the monster. Sound familiar?
And he sounds like the monster.
Exactly.
Now.
And he starts tracking it north through the snow. And at that point, that's when Robert Walton, the English sea captain. That's when he finds him.
I got a bunch of seamen aboard with me. Keep me company.
I think I'll stay down here then.
Well, come down there then.
This is the really fucked up part. Right before the ship they're on is set to turn back for England, right? So this is after Frankenstein relays his whole life story pretty much to Robert.
This was after they saw Frankie Jr. on ice skates.
Yeah. Yeah, this was after they picked him up. They saw Frankie in the night. And
just dying there. Yeah.
But yeah.
They picked him up.
So right before the ship was set to turn back to England, Victor actually dies. Yeah. He died.
But he got everything out he needed to say to the captain, which is like
a call to action. He's like, when I die, you keep on fucking hunting this thing.
You keep going, son. Keep tracking it down. No, actually, he said something opposite. He said, like, relax or be content with tranquility. Ambition is the death of you.
Wow. That's not very inspiring.
No, it's not. Don't have dreams.
They'll fuck you up just and murder your new wife.
Just look at me.
So check it out. Victor dies. And then a few days later, Robert hears a weird noise coming from his room. And then upon...
Who's Robert?
Robert's the captain.
Oh, that's right. Bob.
Upon entering, he finds the creature sobbing over his creator's dead body.
Right.
And he says that he regrets being an instrument of evil. And now that his creator is dead, he's willing to die too. And he disappears into the darkness.
Yeah, he became way more miserable that his father or creator died, because that was all he had, the creature. Without him, he has nothing. Even though he hates his creator at the same time, it's such a weird
concept.
There's
some serious religious undertones to this.
Like God.
Yeah, but also that thing you were saying about Prometheus, creating life, even getting too close to the sun and getting burnt. There's just so many, there's so many parallels with life and bearing the burden of what that has and the sort of feeling lost and abandoned, like you've been abandoned by your creator, you know?
And after the creature told the captain all that shit, he vowed to kill himself.
Yeah, he said he was willing to die too.
And the crew, the last thing the crew saw was Frankie Jr. getting on an ice raft and just sailing straight into the abyss.
Wow. Yeah, that's a little depressing, huh?
It is.
It's not a very happy story.
It's pretty heavy.
So
I like my beer.
I would say that if you want something a little lighter than Dana's beer, don't read the original Frankenstein. Maybe opt for like Young Frankenstein or maybe one of the newer movies of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Well, it is a tragic story, isn't it? And you know why?
Why?
Because Mary Shelley, she was going through some tragic shit in her personal life while she wrote it.
Really?
Yeah, like equally tragic, pretty much.
All right, lay it on me, man. See if I can take it.
So, following that time she was writing, her half-sister, Fanny, committed suicide. Then Shelley, actually, she had quite a few pregnancies and a lot of them kind of died. They kind of died.
One miscarriages.
Sort of.
Or do you mean stillborns or...
Yeah, all of the above. But her first child died while she was still making Frankenstein. And she was like nursing her second child. By the time that the Frankenstein thing was published, her second child had also died.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So she lost some of her family, and her mom died at a very early age. So she created a very strong bond with her dad, who was a famous writer at the time. So when she came out with this Frankenstein novel, the reviews were kind of skewed and sort of controversial. Not controversial,
but probably ahead of its time.
Sort of, but a lot of the critics were like bashing her fame and success just because she was the daughter of a famous author.
Which like, we don't even know who that was because of how successful she became.
Yeah. I think his name was like Mr. Godwin or something. But yeah, like these deaths, I think, fueled what you read. And if these deaths hadn't had happened, the Frankenstein novel might not have had been so dark. Like, where all of his loved ones died. That's pretty much what happened to her. She was the main character.
Wow.
Just let that sink in.
It's sinking.
That's Mary Shelley for you.
But she...
She pooped all over the party.
She was from Switzerland, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put my life on it.
I wouldn't either, man.
Yeah.
But the story takes place in Switzerland, I think, too. The Frankenstein story.
I think it does. But Guillermo, you know Guillermo del Toro, the film director that did Pan's Labyrinth and Hellboy? He does some cool shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
He regards Frankenstein as the quintessential teenage book, saying that it has the feelings that you don't belong, like you were brought to this world by people that don't exactly care about you or care for you, and you're thrown into a world of pain and suffering, which is felt by the creature, and all you have are tears and hunger.
Don't you have any jokes, man? Can't you give me some jokes?
I have nothing.
This is some heavy shit, but it's good stuff too, and I feel like a lot of the things we've talked about,
you know what, I do have something.
You have some jokes?
Yeah.
Lay them on me.
How did Frankenstein get around town?
How?
He drove a monster truck.
But yeah, Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
He's just scared. He's been created with a schnauzer and no way to use it. And he doesn't have any friends or people. He was birthed into a culture that he didn't belong in.
Right. Just because of how fucking tall and grotesque he looked. People didn't accept him.
And I'd also argue because Victor Frankenstein didn't care enough to
raise him like a boy.
Explain him. Because he was the one who created him.
He created
him. What do you
him.
Do it's when almost... your creator is the one who is like...
runs away from you.
You fuck ugly. Get away from me, man.
Right. It's almost like some dads that just leave when, as soon as you're born. You're gone. They're gone. They're out of your life. You know?
Yeah.
It's like a feeling of no worth, or like you weren't worthy. You know?
Yeah. Something you want to say, Dan?
What are you talking
get
about?
Get it off your chest.
No,
you can
not
cry
at all.
On my shoulder any day, man.
No, I'm not. I just
you just went to get some milk and you never came back.
I'm just saying the story is very deep. It has a lot of layers to it, and it was written by a teenage girl who probably felt like she didn't belong and was losing half of her family while writing it.
Yeah.
She's only 18 when she wrote this.
Lots of respect for Mary Shelley.
Mary Shelley.
Yeah. Listeners, I want to say that if you're feeling alone and sometimes like you don't belong, that, you know, it's a common thing.
It is common.
I think we all feel like that sometimes. And
even if you're around somebody, sometimes you feel alone.
Yeah. And just to know that other people are going through that too is kind of nice.
Yeah, and know that you'll never be as ugly as Frankenstein. I mean, Frankie Jr. So you got that going.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're, on that note.
You're alive and kicking.
This has been Mayan.
This is Dana.
And we would like to thank you for joining us on this episode of Best Worst Case Scenario Podcast.
BWCS.
We've had a lot of fun covering Frankenstein. It's a
Frankenstein.
It's a deeper.
It's a little morbid.
A little heavy.
A little more morbid than we
fucking
used
depressing.
To. Yeah.
But we enjoyed it. We hope you enjoyed it.
We did.
Make sure to follow us, like, and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube.
Support us if you made it this far. We deserve it.
We do. It. We really do.
We really do.
And yeah, we appreciate you.
Yeah.
And thank you very much.
Thank you very much.